Here we go. Wheel of Time Season 1 is over, and we're here to record our season finale review. Was it destined to disappoint from the beginning or positioned for promise? We'll talk about it. We're going to tell you what we think about this final episode. My name is Cody, and across the internet from me, my great friend and co-reviewer, Zach Butler. Zach, just give me your general thoughts before we get in depth on this review. What'd you think of the season finale of Season 1 of Wheel of Time?
Man, this season finale left a lot to be desired. I will say that.
Okay.
I felt very similar watching the ending to this as I did when the book finished.
Okay.
I just kind of had this general feeling of, obviously, there's a larger story being told. There's a lot of moving parts. They're obviously setting up for a lot of different things. Some really awesome things happened in this episode that I was really happy about that mm-hmm. we'll get into. But I think the problem was the season was ending. This was
Yeah.
There was not going to be any more after this. There's nothing coming next week. So we have to wait till season two comes out. So whatever happens is it's not permanent, but it's going to linger in fans' minds for a long time. And so it's a tough time to introduce, you know, a lot of different parts and components and stories at the very end of the season. So to me, this felt kind of like the equivalent of stepping into soggy sandals. It's just like, okay, you know what? Like, I'm not too disappointed if I'm at the beach, but you know, I prefer them to be dry. So
absolutely.
This is kind of the feeling I have. What about you, man?
Hey, I'm kind of with you. I feel very similar to how I felt when I finished reading Eye of the World, but for very kind of different reasons. I thought the ending of Eye of the World was a little bit underwhelming and just a lot happens out of nowhere. However, the season finale is wildly different than how the book ends, but I still have the same feeling. So I guess if you're trying to capture the essence of Robert Jordan, they did that. But I don't necessarily think it's a positive in this aspect. However, I will say this. I feel like my critique of this show has kind of softened as it's gone on. And I've kind of seen a little bit of what it wants to be versus what I wanted it to be. And so when I was finished watching and I was like, you know, I thought it was good enough. It was good enough for me to say, hey, I'll watch season two and we'll probably review season two, at least the first few episodes, unless it gets really, really bad or something. And then my wife, who has no familiarity with the books, you know, she's enjoyed the show up to this point. She's sitting next to me. She's like, that's it? Like, that's how they're going to end it? And it does. It raises a lot of questions at the end that if you have no book knowledge, you're kind of scratching your head over, like, what just happened? Mm. And it wasn't necessarily the what just happened of, like, oh, man, I can't wait till next season. It was like, what just happened? You kind of just threw a bunch of stuff out there, and I feel a little cheated. I needed more answers before a cliffhanger. And so my general thoughts, as I've thought more from the perspective of a fresh viewer, I kind of have a lot of critiques of this one. I definitely think it was a bit of a slide back from what the setup was in episode 7. But hey, man, let's get right into it. Let's just talk about what I'm going to go out there and say. Both of us probably have a huge critique. We've talked about Perrin, 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 Perrin all season, and he's hardly in this episode, first of all. And then he hardly does anything. What are you thinking? What are your thoughts on this character's development from episode 1 to 8, especially in episode 8 here?
You could have removed Perrin from the entire season and nothing, in my opinion, would have changed. Like, no one's lives been different. And it is tough to say because he's such a well-liked character in the book. Because he's so friendly and he cares about his friends and he's like such a loyal friend in the books, and to just kind of do him dirty like that, I'm just, you know, you don't really develop it. You hint and you hint and you hint, okay, he's something more, he's something more, what is he? And then you don't even deliver in the season finale.
No.
Like, you just he's completely wasted, honestly, in the season finale. He doesn't really add anything other than just getting us to, you know, when the horn gets stolen. Like, mm-hmm. that was kind of his whole purpose, was just for us to see that, which could have been accomplished without him even being there.
Yeah.
Like, we could have just followed a one of the random Faldara, you know, soldiers or whatever.
Yeah.
We kind of did. We were introduced to a whole new character, and then...
Thumbs down on that decision for me, by the way.
Yeah, just kind of... I don't know what we were doing there. And so the funny thing was, the entire time Perrin was on screen and he had a scene, I was thinking of you. I was like, okay, Cody said it's got to be this episode, or, you know, that's just sloppy storytelling. And here we are. We still don't know what he is. If you haven't read the books, and I'll be honest, I don't really remember what he's supposed to be. So I was kind of waiting for that reveal just mm-hmm. to jog my memory. So yeah, man, I don't know if he was even an essential character to the season.
Yeah.
I would go that far to say.
Yeah.
What about you?
Man, super tough. And, like, there's things they could have done to illustrate kind of what he is, what his powers are, right? Because Pad and Fane there at the end, he mentions that they're Ta'veren, and Perrin's like, what is that? And it's kind of a subtle line of, like, hey, you're essential figures in the pattern of the wheel, and the general audience member is probably like, what? And okay. So I think that would have been a good opportunity, right? To maybe allow, even though it's not in the books, right? It would be adapting for the screen. Allow Perrin's rage to raise up, right? Let's see a little bit of that berserker rage. See him maybe try and attack Pad and Fane. And then one of the Mir Drawl just totally shuts him down. And you see how powerful the Mir Drawl is. And then Pad and Fane, you know, decides to be, you know, spare Perrin's life. And then it kind of gives you a picture of how important the Ta'veren are, that Pad and Fane is this really weird, sinister type of villain, which he is. You just give us something, like, that you could have done in 15 seconds. But instead, we got a five-minute dialogue scene between a brother and a sister who were not properly established in the first place. And then there is an exchange about him, whether or not he's going to wear his father's armor, and this, like, thing going on, and these characters are developed. And then by the end of the episode, it's the sister is at the very least dead, and we're led to believe that Amalar is probably dead. But since we didn't really see him die on screen, there's a chance he might be back. But we spent time developing characters who we didn't need in the season finale, and that's been an ongoing problem with this show. And I talked to my brother, who liked the show. He's fresh to Wheel of Time, no background with the books. He did say one of his critiques, though, is he didn't really know who to care about in the show. And I'm glad to hear that come from him, because, like, we've been watching this with a critical eye and trying to, like, pick it apart. And sometimes you feel like you're bullying it a little bit. But it is true. Like, I feel like the general audience member is like, I don't really know who to like. There's a lot of cool things going on I like here that I can enjoy. But I don't think that there was ever a character set up to be like, hey, this is who you gotta love. Because they wanted to be Game of Thrones. They wanted that mystery that the first season of Game of Thrones had. But, like, the murder mystery in Game of Thrones. They want the Dragon Reborn mystery in here. There's a lot of things they tried to copy from that show. And it's just like, just trust the source material. You know, it'll all come together.
They have the source material for a reason. Mm-hmm. Fans love it for a reason. I appreciated the mystery of who is the Dragon Reborn. They wrote that, honestly, maybe a little too long. Mm-hmm. They needed to kind of hop off that plot probably two episodes ago and just, like, give us a good ending.
Yeah.
But they wrote that mystery literally to the episode before the season finale. So now you don't really have much time to, you know, work with that plot development. And then, like you said, you're going to add a bunch of extra characters that we don't really care about or know. And you're trying to add backstory when we already, and it was sad because we already had an episode with the episode before that we had great character development. I was talking about, this is one of the best character development episodes that we've had. Like, I really enjoyed it. And I was like, okay, if this show finally found its stride with the amount of characters that they have. And then they go kind of right back to what they were doing in the middle of the season of just like, which one do we pick? Which one do we pick? We don't know which character we're going to go with. And and then you kind of just get a mess.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you just get people that die that, like, you're kind of indifferent to, which I know the show was probably not going for. And then you've got, you know, the Dark One, man. You've got the Dark One.
Yeah.
Finally shows up. Great entrance. I thought, you know, the whole dream sequence honestly got me. Like, mm-hmm. I was like, wait a
yeah.
minute.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure she doesn't die, but, like... Who knows where this show is going?
Yeah, the first time he's on screen, I was like, hey, that was good. I liked that.
Yeah. Yeah, so we get him, and I think we should talk about him a little
yeah,
bit, man.
Yeah, let's go
I
mean, for
he's
it.
He's a major, obviously, the antagonist.
He is,
and
yeah.
He's been, you know, hinted at throughout the mm-hmm. entire show. This is what we're building towards. What did you think of the Dark One, man? What did you think of the acting, all of it? Tell me.
Well, first, I thought it was a good choice to give him his humanoid form for the most part on screen, because when he initially appeared in the special effects over his face, I was like, oh, like in a well-lit scene, this doesn't look good. So I was glad they just
like
decided for an actor. I was like, okay, that was better. But let's go. I want to go all the way back to the cold open for this. I actually didn't like the cold open for this show at all. Because of the fact, like, that is how the books open. And I just feel like in the last episode of the show, you are really, really putting a lot on us to, like, grasp. There's so much in this episode they want everyone to pick up and get in the final episode. I feel like they should have built some more things in, like the fact mm-hmm. that the Dragon Reborn is loose there in Telamon, just kind of reincarnated over and over and over again. The fact that we got who the dragon was in the last episode, and then we have to figure out exactly what the dragon is in this episode, it was a lot. Like, it was. Like, you know, that's something I thought they should have done that earlier, right? They should have done it earlier in the season. And I think, you know, we had a great comment on our last video about how someone just kind of thought, you know, maybe 8 episodes just wasn't quite enough to do this story justice. And I feel like in the finale, you kind of really felt that. And I think you could have done a lot more if you would have done like 2 more episodes, like a 10 episode season. That's 10 hours. You could have fleshed some things out. You really could have done some of the more intricate story developments and character developments better. And I do think going forward, they should highly consider either doing 10 episode seasons or really consider whether or not are they using their screen time efficiently. But talking about the Dark One, I thought his initial reveal in the forest was very good. However, his interaction at the end with Rand, I didn't really like, because this is the season finale. This is the big reveal, and he's kind of trapped in this dream sequence, having more of a verbal bout with the Dark One, and that is somewhat true to the books, whereas this is something that happens periodically through Rand's journey in the books, and they waited to kind of, like, backload a lot of that stuff into this final episode, and I thought that the performances and the dialogue was fine. I just didn't really want that sequence to be our dramatic ending here, and they did make some huge changes from the books, where I feel like here, this is all I'll say without giving spoilers from the books, I feel like the exchange with the Dark One and Rand didn't properly show how powerful Rand is as the Dragon Reborn, which definitely does happen in the books. Even though the ending to the books is like crazy and somewhat all over the place, you get a huge grasp of how powerful Rand is when he touches the source, and it's insane. And we didn't really get that in the season finale, which I think is not nearly as rewarding as what they decided to do, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I agree, because, you know, you have Nynaeve that has a huge source of power as well
mm-hmm.
that we've seen on display that, you know, if you're going to go with the Dragon Reborn, you're going to go with Rand, you do have to do it bigger. You have to do it much bigger and show a lot more power. And I'll be honest, they kind of look the same on screen, at least with
yeah.
their abilities and mm-hmm. kind of their strength. And so I agree. The final battle was a little underwhelming. I thought Moraine kind of, useless there at the end. I get it. Like, this is Rand's battle. This is like, he's got to make the choice. Mm-hmm. It did seem kind of cheap though, that, you know, it's like, well, if you don't make the right choice, then like, I'll make the choice. It's like, okay, what, like, why right. even bring him here? It's
yeah.
just like, all right, what are we doing? So I thought that was, I did like how she had her power stripped from her. That was a cool twist at the end, in my opinion.
Okay.
But yeah, man, I think just the Dark One in general, couldn't tell. Like I was telling you, I couldn't tell if he was a chauffeur or not. Just the entire mm-hmm. dress of the Dark One was
true. Like, he does kind of look like a butler.
Like, wearing a suit, like a modern day tuxedo.
Yeah.
And then I was like, okay, this must be, you know, business casual for sure. know, that time
right.
period.
Yeah. Right.
But I thought the actor did a great job.
Yeah.
I thought he did portray the confidence and the arrogance that you would expect the Dark One to have. I don't really know if they showed how powerful, like we were just saying, how Rand wasn't showing how powerful he was. I don't mm-hmm. think they showed really how powerful the Dark One was.
Sure. Yeah.
In my opinion.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that he was probably, for people who haven't read the books, kind of underwhelming that he was defeated so mm-hmm. quickly. At least, obviously, we haven't another season, so you gotta assume he's probably not gone away if we have a whole another season coming to us. But just, you know, just that whole end sequence just was, I think they handled it well. Like, it is confusing in the book, but mm-hmm. it's a little underwhelming. It falls kind of flat, in my opinion. Kind of like that battle, man. We got to talk about the battle. I know you had some strong opinions
yeah.
about the Battle of Faldara here. Just lay it on the people, man. What are you thinking?
Well, overall, my thoughts on it were, as far as like the sequence of the action and all that, it was decent. But it was clear to me that they ran out of money, right? They ran out of money. It you know, you asked me, was it just your TV or was it just the whole scene was dark? It was dark because they didn't have enough money to make it look good in good lighting. And as good as I thought the Trollocs and everything looked in the first episode, clearly they spent it all on the first episode, which, don't get me wrong, your pilot is your most important episode. And I would say that your next and most important episode is your finale. Your pilot and your finale are your two most important ones. And I think the battle, for me, the whole linking and channeling and destroying a whole field of Trollocs with this chain lightning thing, that is, to my recollection, not how it happens in the books. And what happens in the books is one of those things where I believe the Dragon Reborn's power is displayed. And for me, I'm thinking to myself, like, you have women who were rejected as Aes Sedai, and those who are untrained in how to channel properly, linking together to call forth amazing power. And yeah. I know that linking can be more powerful in all of that. However, we were never set up as audience members to really understand, like, how can five virtual untrained mm-hmm. people channel so much power? Like, what is the point of even going to the White Tower if you can do this untrained, right? Yeah. And they kind of show, like, hey, uncontrolled magic can kill you. Which was kind of like the consequence, right? And that that whole sequence, I believe, was set up mainly to, you know, give us this false sense of loss with Nynaeve, because we all knew she wasn't going to die, right? Mm-hmm. Like, anybody think Nynaeve is going to die at the end there? If so, hit the thumbs up on this video. And if you didn't think she was going to die there, hit the thumbs up on this video. Put a comment down below. Was Nynaeve ever going to die? But the reality is, Nynaeve was never going to die. And we all knew this. And it was an opportunity basically just to display, like, oh, hey, Egwene is a powerful channeler as well. Which is fine that they wanted to exemplify that, because the way that it happens within the book kind of happens over a longer sequence. So they kind of wanted to do it in a way that is kind of confined and, you know, within an action sequence. But man, I'm not going to lie, the whole Link channeling, it was hard for me not to just kind of laugh. I was like, this looks ridiculous. Like, I am sorry.
How funny would that have been to film where special effects going on? You just have a bunch of people like shaking and screaming. It would have been, I was like, if I was the director, I would have been cracking.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
But yeah, dude, it was that whole Link scene, because then it's just like, it just diminishes kind of everything that, you know, the King of Faldaro did. To like sacrifice himself and everybody. It's like, well, why did you just send them to the front?
Yeah, send them to the front and then
stop it all.
However, though, that is what the sister did suggest, though, right? Remember, she kind of like, hey, let us use our magic first. And, you know, that was a little bit set up. However, it was an unnecessary scene. I still stand by that.
Yeah, and it's just like, you don't get to know the king or like the sister all that well to even be like, oh, well, he's just arrogant, so that's why he would do, like, I'm just saying, like, I don't know if he is or not, but it's just like, nothing was really set up. So then when that happens, you're like, I was like, why didn't they just go to the gap, man, and stop it all? Because obviously that's all it takes, and Egwene obviously can just heal them all if she really wanted to. So I get it. The whole scene was to set up to show Egwene's a powerful healer, that, you know, we're gonna kind of do the bait and switch with Nynaeve and just, oh, yeah, she's not dead. Or she's dead, she's not dead. So yeah, the whole battle scene, you gotta have, you know, the big war at the end. And it's in the book, but like, like you said, it was dark, you didn't see much, you didn't get that sense of like, oh, this is scaled, this is big, like, this is the big fight that they're about to go, because they didn't really have all that many soldiers to defend with. They, like, you know, they're fighting off of 10,000 to 20,000 Trollocs, and they had hardly any soldiers. So,
yeah,
like, that would have been a great opportunity to show the scale of, you know, the enemy and just like how, like, against the odds. And I guess they kind of did, but against the odds that these people are standing against. But you kind of diminish it all when you have a bunch of people linked and throwing lightning bolts from the sky. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that one kind of fell flat for me as well.
Yeah, yeah. I do want to mention here something that I think was a strength, and I'm curious what you think about it as well. And then we'll kind of start getting into our wrap up here. I actually do think Rand in this episode, overcoming the Dark One, showing the type of hero that he is, and really showing he's willing to sacrifice a life of exile and solitude so that his friends and loved ones can be safe, was a good portrayal of who he is as a hero. I felt like we were really waiting for episode after episode after episode to be like, hey, are we ever going to see Rand the hero, or are we always going to see Rand the whiner, right? You know, because he is both, right? In the story, he is both, but he is a frustrating hero because you know how good of a hero that he can be, yet he constantly frustrates you because of his flaws at times. And so I actually liked how his sacrifice was portrayed. I liked how he overcame the Dark One. I like how you were just given that little bit of tension of like, oh my gosh, is he really giving into this right now? And then he shuts it down at the last second. I thought that was done pretty well. And I did enjoy that aspect of it. And I do like how it kind of ends on the note of like, hey, I'm going into solitude, even though I would have wanted it to play out just a tad bit different. I don't like him going into 100% isolation here at the end of the season without anybody with him, but it just kind of shows you the type of hero that he is. Because at the end of the day, I mean, outside of being the Dragon Reborn, he has no idea how to channel. He's not really a trained fighter, so he's a guy who's just out of his own necessities, just going out into the wilderness, and he's just going to try and, you know, be in exile. So
out into the blight, no less.
Like, yeah,
he's seen what it can do to people
who
wander out there. So
yeah,
I agree, man. I think that if it, for all of the flaws that he's had this season, they built towards this sacrificial moment. Like, he was gonna, he is the friend that's willing to sacrifice his own happy life that he could create. He's willing to sacrifice that to save his friends. You saw that with him and Matt. He was constantly defending Matt, even though we were all like, dude, come on, just look at him. he's obviously not doing well.
Yeah.
But he defends people. And so I think that was a good move. Honestly, I appreciated that. I think it sets up really well for the second season. He's kind of going, you know, full Luke Skywalker, like I'm going off on my own, doing my own thing here. So I think it sets up well for the next season. I think that, I mean, it'll be interesting because I never read The Great Hunt. You did. They obviously set it up for that book. Because as I remember, them looking for the horn is a big part of the second book.
Yeah.
So they definitely set it up to potentially do the second book as the second season. But if this is the first season that is the Eye of the World book, I want to ask this right before we wrap up here. Do you think this was Eye of the World, man? From what you read, I'm hazy on a lot of the details, but this, I mean, it kind of, it feels like they wanted season one to be book one. And so what do you think?
Yeah, I would say for me, I would consider this a highly functional adaptation, basically meaning they took the elements and wanted to get the overarching feel of the story, but made changes to make it more like a television show rather than a literal adaptation. I would say that, you know, if 50%, you know, you're right in the middle, that's kind of right where you want to be, in between functional and literal. I would say that this leans heavily towards functional, probably, you know, halfway between functional and the middle, if that makes sense to people there, if you can imagine that meter. So I would say it did not feel like Eye of the World to me. It felt like a conglomeration of some things from Eye of the World and The Great Hunt of what was the overarching storyline told within the first two books. How do we get to the necessary point of tension at a breaking point to basically say, like, hey, this is where this story ends and this story begins? And I would say didn't feel too much of a faithful adaptation. However, I felt that the show was fun at certain moments. And I would say if you have not read the books yet, I would suggest giving it a read and seeing what you think. If you love the show and haven't read the books, give the books a read and you will experience a very different story. And I think you'll like that one as well. But I would not say that this is Eye of the World, in my opinion.
No, I tend to agree with you, man, from what I can remember. One thing the show did do for me is I'm going to go read the other half of my two-parter The Great Hunt.
Nice.
Because some of you know that I bought half of the book for some reason and need to read the other half. So I want to go read that, get ready for season two, man. But yeah, man, that is episode 8, season one. I think we're going to do a full season talk for one of our episodes coming up.
Yeah.
So we'll get on that.
Yeah. We'll do a full season review, an overarching review, and how we would recommend it and rate it, kind of putting all of our things together. But in conclusion here of episode 8, the season finale, I'll give this a final score. I hate to have to go back, but this one for me is going down to a 6 out of 10 on the score, which is only above average. It missed a 7 out of 10 because not finishing Perrin's story arc in a concluding way. And I think giving significant screen time to insignificant characters was a really bad decision in your last episode of the first season. So those are some pretty big marks down. And I am typically harder on pilots and finales. So that's my score.
That's good, man. That's probably going to where my score lands. For pretty much the same reasons. I'll also add just a very anticlimactic battle scene. If you're going to throw a big war scene in there, at least see it through. At least have some tension. Let us see the enemy a little bit. Don't just make it all dark and leave us also in the dark. So 6 out of 10 for me as well, man.
All right, very good. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you liked it, please make sure to give it a thumbs up and subscribe to our channel if you want more Wheel of Time. We will be doing a full season review here very, very soon. I hope you all had a fantastic Christmas. Whether you celebrate it or not, I hope it was a wonderful day and that you guys have a fantastic rest of your holiday season. We'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.